Welcome back to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, Eastern Utah's home for the Utah Jazz.
Time for that Monday basketball talk here on Drive Time Sports. We have plenty of NBA coming up tonight at about 8 o'clock. We're going to send you out to live pregame coverage. The Utah Jazz playing host to the Los Angeles Lakers. No LeBron James tonight. That is now official. And we'll see if the Jazz can keep this magic rolling early on. Joining us to talk about that, to talk about some of the other headlines as well, we have James Holis. He's half of the Dunk Tales pod. Joins us every Monday to talk NBA basketball. James, great to get you back on today.
Thank you, my friend. Yeah, I know we're supposed to go a little earlier. I got caught up a little bit, but let's talk some basketball.
Let's talk basketball. Tonight, the Utah Jazz a chance to make it two in a row against the Los Angeles Lakers. Taking care of business, if it's the Lakers, if it's the Clippers, doesn't seem to matter at this point in time. The Jazz get some help tonight. LeBron James is not going to play. Patrick Beverley is not going to play. I see absolutely no way. No Lonnie Walker either. So I see absolutely no way the Lakers win this one, which means Jazz fans are going to be smiling an awful lot tomorrow, and this early season magic is going to continue at least for a moment, sitting at 8-3, half game back or a full game back of the best record in the Western Conference.
If you had told me in the summertime that even with LeBron James sitting, the Lakers are the trap game for the Utah Jazz, I would laugh at you. But this is the definition of a trap game, right? I know the Jazz are brimming with confidence right now. The Lakers look like they're dead in the water. But, I mean, you don't know. You never know, right? Russell Westbrook has been playing great off the bench. Anthony Davis is still Anthony Davis. I feel like the Jazz are teetering and on something that's not really sustainable. We've talked about this. So it might be a better game than we think, but also we know that the Lakers are a pretty sucky roster. So,
yeah, James, let me ask you this question.
One more game. You got to deal with one more game.
Let me ask you this question, and this is pertaining to the front office of the Utah Jazz, because you and I have always talked about, look, 20 games, right? 20 games, things settle down, you start to see some of the flukish nature stuff kind of go by the wayside, takes 20 games. Let's go to the 25-game mark, and let's say the Jazz are at 16-9 when they hit that 25-game mark, okay? I'll throw 16-9 out because that's essentially 500 basketball from here to that point. What does the front office do? Right, like you have all these assets that you acquired from Gobert and from the Mitchell deal and from the Royce O'Neal deal. Like they traded so many key players, they grabbed so many assets. If you are 16-9 at that particular moment, what do you do? Do you try to trade some of those assets and, I don't want to say make a run, but at least play competitive basketball the remainder of this season? Do you sell off Conley and Clarkson with a winning record? What does the front office do at that point?
Right, I get the optics of it would be terrible for them to say, okay, this was fun and pull the plug. But at the same time, like, they obviously have a long-term plan in effect. There's a reason they moved Gobert, the reason they moved Donovan Mitchell. You get all these picks. If you allow a sentimental, hey, let's just be scrappy and good and see how far it takes us, if you allow that to derail your plan, then your plan wasn't very good at all. I believe that Danny Ainge is dispassionate enough. He's basically emotionless enough about this where he's able to say, all right, this is fun, but if ownership lets me, I'm going to tear this down like we planned to. It's definitely one of the bigger surprises, even of the early season. I figured they'd have a hot start and maybe start cooling off by now, but they're beating good teams. They're giving good teams good run. They look like they might be legitimately a decent, functional team. And that's where, I don't know, that's why I thought when they started the teardown, if you're going to go in for a penny, go in for a pound, they should have shipped all the rest of those guys out this summer. But, you know, here we are.
Let's talk about one of the teams in which the Jazz made a deal with. Donovan Mitchell, the Cleveland Cavaliers right now. Cleveland sitting at 8-1. Donovan looks like a top 10 player in the league. He's been fantastic. We knew that this was going to be a team solid 1-5, maybe even 1-6. I really didn't know if this squad necessarily had the depth to compete for an NBA championship. But look, 10 games into the season, they look pretty good, and Donovan looks great as well. So, I mean, if you're a Jazz fan, you better savor all the assets that you got, because all of a sudden a guy who was top 20, top 25 maybe with Utah, all of a sudden looks top 10, and those guys are hard to come by.
Absolutely. And Jazz fans have already seen this level of Donovan in spurts. So Can he maintain this for a full season? We'll see. It takes a lot of energy to do what he's doing. It takes a lot of force to do what he's doing. And there's a good chance we've seen this. We've seen him do playoff series like this before. We've seen him do this for weeks at a time. Let's see if he can maintain that level for a season. Garland and him are a better fit than I thought. Those two, that double big is mobile enough and long enough to just really be disruptive on defense and offense. So they definitely look better, and they've gelled faster than I thought. I don't think Donovan Mitchell is this level of player, but we also think he's better than he was given credit for maybe his last year in Utah.
Sure. No, I agree with that. Now, the other trade, if we talk about the Jazz sending out Rudy Gobert to Minnesota, I was really curious about this. The Timberwolves, to me, were one of the more intriguing teams. How was this going to work with Karl-Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert? And I think that the roster does have a few misfits, but they really put a lot of their future assets into this trade with Gobert. 10 games in, they're 5-5, and I think it's fair to say that there's either some roster redundancy or some really weird fitting pieces with this roster right now. A 5-5 team that gave up a boatload of assets, that's not a great start.
Yeah, so they gave up a lot of what made them successful, depth and kind of grit and defense on the perimeter with what's the kid's name, Vanderbilt,
mm-hmm.
and Patrick Beverly, and they gave it up for a piece that is like a rectangular peg for a square hole. It's just not quite a clean, good fit. You got young Ant Edwards saying, you know, the reason they dunk because, you know, the lane's always clogged, and, you know, I play better with a small lineup. So the front office, you want to give them a little credit for taking the big swing. You just we knew it kind of wouldn't fit, and I think a lot of people question the fit. And right now, a lot of people are right. Gobert and Karl-Anthony Towns just aren't a very very synergistic duo. Let's say that. They don't really feed off each other. They don't really play well together. I like Ant Edwards. Other than that, I'm not very fond of the makeup of that team. And, yeah, I kind of like watching them kind of fall apart.
Again, our guest right now, James Holas. He joins us every Monday to talk NBA basketball. James, we have a game tonight that I think is intriguing just based off of the fact that the Warriors had an incredibly horrible road trip. We're talking about the defending champs going on the road and losing to the Hornets, the Pistons, the Heat, the Magic, and the Pelicans. Now they get the Kings at home tonight. Again, 10 games into the season, but a 5-game road trip where you lose all 5 as the defending champs, that is worrisome. If you're a Warriors fan, you have some legitimate concern. You have to be. I mean, you would think you would steal at least 1 or 2 of those games. They lost to the Magic and the Hornets and the Pistons. 3 games they should not be losing if you play these games on Mars.
And I can't lie to you, this was exquisite for me also. As a Celtics fan who lost to the Warriors in the finals, I like to see them take their lumps. But, this is definitely a byproduct of them trying to run their 2 timelines, right? They have their core, and now they're trying to bring up these fledgling players. There's not a lot of stopgap pieces in between as far as guys like Sean Livingston, guys like David West. Those vets that are savvy and will give you a good 15 minutes and hit a shot or two and make a defensive play or two, and just know how to play. These young guys are really kind of struggling. Kuminga looked good the other night without any of the other starters. But other than that, Wiseman's really struggling. They seem like they're missing Gary Payton, the second's kind of defensive intensity and just kind of energy. They just don't, maybe you can almost see the body language with Steph and Dre when they come off the court. Well, that lead we just built up is going to be gone soon, you know. So definitely, and then you factor in the Draymond thing this summer, Draymond's age, Poole's pressure from his brand new spanking extension coming up. You can see where maybe things are starting to maybe unravel just a little bit around the edges for the Warriors. So it'll be interesting to see at 25 games how they look.
Yeah, and I like what you pointed out. I mean, it is unique, right, the way they're trying to, I don't know if rebuild this roster, maybe reload this roster is the right term. I don't think rebuild is the correct term. But as you mentioned, I mean, they have their young guns coming up that maybe would just step in and replace the veterans. You don't really see that specifically in today's realm of the free agency when you're talking about a max deal being around anywhere from 2 to 5 years, depending on what type of player it is. It's unique. We haven't really seen it done this way. I like the way you pointed that out.
Yeah, it's definitely a unique thing where everyone keeps saying you need to maximize Steph and Clay and Dre. This is not maximizing them because you're trying to also spoon feed and get these young guys some developmental minutes. But every win is necessary because if you want to have, you know, at least a decent seed into the playoffs and these guys to have solid roles in the playoffs, So it's definitely it's not about winning right now. It's also about developing. But for a team, you know, with a core as old as Golden State, then those two things don't really match up. So very, very, very fascinating to watch. Let's see if they can pull it off.
Let's talk Eastern Conference with the Brooklyn Nets, probably the most dysfunctional franchise I've seen in quite some time, and that's saying something, considering this is a league with the Lakers and the Knicks, but that's exactly what Brooklyn is. They get rid of Steve Nash. There's the idea that Ben Simmons is going to return tonight. There was the report last week that Ime Udoka would be the next head coach. Now there's reports surfacing today that there's some people within the organization really pushing to not hire Udoka. So, I mean, really, when you look at the Nets, this is can't-miss TV. Here they are. 4-6. They've won their last two games, and you get Ben Simmons back. We'll see how this fit looks, but nonetheless, it's like a soap opera right now.
It is, and another one. If you look back 2 years ago and told me that the Nets would be scuffling along at under 500, and they hadn't won a playoff, you know, series and whatever, like I would have called you a liar. I thought Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving were enough to really make a lot of noise. Adding Ben Simmons, I thought they'd be real challenges this year. It looks like Ben Simmons' psyche might be a little more dented than we thought, or after a year plus layoff, is taking longer to ramp up than we thought. Kyrie obviously being out. Hey, freedom of speech means you don't get persecuted by the law or the government for what you say. There are still consequences for the things you say. He is paying those consequences now. It is what it is. But I also believe that his whole the Kyrie debacle kind of cast a pretty ugly pall over everyone in that locker room. It's just another thing added to a stressful season when you're not winning already. And now they're talking about bringing a coach who's an embattled coach from another team, a disgraced coach right now. So the Ime Udoka stuff sounds, it reeks of desperation of a team that they not like Golden State where it may be fraying. They realize their season's spinning out of control already, less than 10 games in. They realize they are teetering on the brink of some kind of internal, just complete, just disintegration as far as the culture of that team, the fabric of that team. So I think that they're really grasping at straws. Ime did a really good job on court and in the locker room with the Boston Celtics last year as far as holding guys accountable and driving a culture of defense. That's what they're banking on. But, again, with what just happened with Ime Udoka, does that change the complex of how he approaches things? So this is we have never seen anything quite like that. Two teams. We haven't seen a team like Golden State do their dual timeline thing. We haven't seen a team with as much talent up top as Brooklyn fumble so badly.
Yeah, and the Ime Udoka situation or storyline, I think just it adds so much more to it, because if you can get past what happened in Boston, which we still don't know, there's been reports, we don't know 110% the facts of what went down. If you can weather the PR nightmare, the PR storm that's going to come with hiring someone like Ime, look, you knock it out of the park. There isn't a team in the league that wouldn't want Ime Udoka as their next head coach. Is it worth the risk? I mean, to me, that is the ultimate high risk, high reward type signing. If it works out, like if you can go ahead and get past everything that's going to come your way after everything that already come with Kyrie, yes, it's a great hire. Would you take that risk, James?
You know what? In a vacuum by itself, you're absolutely right. It's definitely a risk that a front office could look at and say, we vetted the issues, we don't think, blah, blah, cool. With all of the other issues, Kevin Durant just demanded a trade. You wanted the coach fired. You refused to. In the seven games into the season, you fire him. And the Kyrie issues with all Ben Simmons and his getting the yips now or whatever's happened with him. With all of the other issues, it seems like it's throwing a flammable liquid on top of an already bubbling fire. So it's almost like, I guess, I don't know if it's worth the risk, but they're almost saying, hey, what else do we have to lose?
Sure. Yeah. Lastly, before I let you go, James, we have the Milwaukee Bucks, the only unbeaten team in the NBA. They got a nice stretch of games. Atlanta on the road tonight. Oklahoma City, San Antonio, only three games this week. When you and I talk next Monday, are the Bucks still undefeated?
Give me those games again.
They got at Atlanta, at OKC, at San Antonio.
I am going to say no. They're going to lose one, which is fine, and they're going to probably lose the one in the middle, which is going to spark them, or the first one to Atlanta is going to spark them, and they're probably going to destroy the next team or two. Because, and it's crazy, they're doing all this without Chris Middleton.
Mm-hmm.
Giannis is incredible. That team, you know, this is where it comes about corporate knowledge and just the confidence of knowing you can do it. And, you know, it's funny because all the talk during the offseason, they kind of flew under the radar. And I was asking people, are you really that low on the Bucks? Oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, Chris Middleton was out. Yeah, but this team and Boston – Boston, obviously, but then they're like, yeah, the Nets and the Cavaliers, and which is great. But, yeah, the Bucks, I still are just a deep, dangerous team. Kudos to Giannis and Drew Holiday for doing what they do. And I know you said that's the last thing, but I can't not mention that Boston had 27 three-pointers the other night against the Knicks.
You got to sneak in some Celtics talk somewhere. Look, 6-3, all things considered, a disastrous final month before heading into the season. You've got to feel pretty good about where the Celtics are.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about the defense. They've been hemorrhaging points. But Tatum looks like an MVP-level type player. Brown, I think, look, Brown's numbers look pretty good. I still give him a C-minus so far. I don't think he's been playing great. Boston has a lot of room for improvement. But at 6-3, like you said, a huge offensive explosion against the Knicks. Their defense has slipped, but their offense has been humming. So, yeah, I'm feeling okay.
James Holis again, half of the Dunktales pod. James, got to listen to the show last week. Great stuff as always. Before I let you go, let the listeners know where they can find it.
Just an homage to my once favorite player, Scottie Pippen. So it's at Snotty Drippin on all socials, really. We do the Dunktales once a week. I lost a show to the Ether last night, so we're going to record again tonight. Check us out, man. We're on iTunes. We're on Spotify, all platforms. The Dunktales. That's us.
James, always great to get you on the show. Appreciate the time. We'll do it again next week. Thank you.
Thank you, my man.
Let's pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. We'll close out with some college football talk. That's right after this.